top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 294, Slaughter Hotel, which also goes by the Italian La Bestia Uccidere Sangue Freddo, which is the beast that kills in cold blood, which was also translated into English as the beast something or other. What was the other title?
I don't know, but I was really hoping you would regale us with your Italian.
As soon as I saw the alternate title,
I was like, I hope Chris regales us with his Italian with a proper accent.
Oh, yeah, proper pronunciation.
What region are we talking about here?
I'm not sure, but I tried to figure out where that hotel is, and I put hotel in air quotes because mm-hmm. this is a very bizarre
title. Well, it's not hotel, but it might as well be.
It might as well be. This is a sanitarium, mm-hmm. or is it a sanatorium? I've heard both. One is a Metallica song as well as the
sanitarium.
But I'm pretty sure it's a sanatorium that treats the mentally ill mm-hmm. back in the day.
Well, this is a concept that I've seen before in horror movies where it's a sanitarium. It's a hospital for the mentally ill, which is basically described as a hotel. There's a movie called Horror Hospital, starring Michael Gow, which has the exact same conceit.
But love a hospital, at least, though, there's something approaching healthcare provision mm-hmm. here. I don't know.
And this is basically a hotel, in quotes, but really a hospital or a sanitarium for women, all suffering from a multitude of afflictions, each of them more or less having to do with affairs of the heart, or affairs of the libido, if you want to put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was thinking, like, this couldn't be a worse place to put people with mental health issues, because this is probably, what, a 16th century castle?
Possibly, gorgeous give or place.
Take. Gorgeous, mm-hmm. In the probably the Tuscan hills or something.
Would you describe the architecture as...
Oh, God, I put him on the spot. No idea.
I expect you to just jump right in there. That's what I was like.
Early Renaissance Tuscan, I don't know, but it's completely replete with suits of armor and various pointy objects that mm-hmm. is so...
Various implements that can be used to...
For self-harm or harming someone else. And it's pretty funny because one of the patients...
Or to end a lifespan quite...
Promptly. Yeah. And it's funny, as one of the people... I guess they're all self-admitted, but it's not necessarily the case. One of them, when she's given a tour of the facility, and the doctor, who looks like some weird version of Peter Fonda, is regaling her with how wonderful it is.
Peter
saying,
Fonda, may rest in peace, look like a weird version of Peter Fonda. So
it's true. Well, okay, let's say from Easy Rider, he had the same sideburns, and he was saying, this place is, you're going to love it here, which is an odd thing to say. At least say you're going to get better. And she tries to club him over the head and in this very underwhelming scene. But I got to say, and this is no hyperbole here, the first 5 minutes... when we're treated to this gift of beautiful shadows and chiaroscuro and giallo intensity, this was the best first 5 minutes of a horror movie, like up there with Black Christmas, up there with, I don't even know, this was Cracker Jack opening, and then it was going in all different directions. We were texting one another going, I'm not sure what's going. Yeah.
And then we had the credits, and the credits were all bathed in green, and all these weird sort of Dutch angles and stuff.
Yeah, and stills of people that you've not seen. And it's like, why would... Is that important to see a still of Klaus Kinski? And it's like, oh...
Any still of Klaus Kinski is appreciated by me, I gotta say. Although in this film, his hair did more acting than anything. He sort of was sporting like the Rachel from Friends.
Have we overused the Geico caveman? But yeah, it was a thinning coif. Yeah. Oh my God.
He's like a progenitor Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Klaus Kinski. He really does. I can see that. He really looks like Willem Dafoe. Or Willem Dafoe looks like him.
Given like life imitating art and whatnot, I can't see any scenario where I could envision being given mental health advice from Klaus Kinski, but this is pretty fantastic.
Talk to Werner Herzog about that. It's to say.
Well, one of these days, a Fitzcarraldo podcast in our future, who knows? But the first people we're introduced to who go to this place, it's a husband and wife with marital problems, as you alluded to. And it's very funny because she tries to kill him en route.
Well, run him off the road, which leads to the hilarious line. killing me, I'm just paraphrasing now, but yeah. Killing me I can understand, but why would you want to commit suicide as well?
So who knows what this couple's backstory is. Maybe he was going to Beretta her or something like that. Or clearly there's discord in the marriage if she's going to run him off the road in his snazzy convertible. But they're there, and they mention this in this little banter, to get treated by a famous physician whose name is, I think, Dr. Oppenheimer or something like that. Or maybe it was that the guy who developed the H-bomb. I don't know. It was Oppen something or other, something German and something, you know, lofty sounding, who is a celebrity psychiatrist. And he even said that maybe the beautiful surroundings will help you cure your mental illness, which is interesting as well. I guess
it's kind of a circumspect.
I guess it kind of could be worse, right? And so there are
rather that than some sort of clinical environment, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Although, speaking of clinical, there's not much in the way of any sort of treatment being offered at this place of any capacity.
I mean, one of the selling points is that the inmates, or patients, whatever you want to call them, are allowed to roam the grounds freely. There's a lot of playing of, what is it, croquet?
Yeah.
But in such a bizarre, haphazard fashion. I don't get that game. I really don't get that game. Can you explain that game to me?
Right now? No. isn't there just a wicket and you bang the ball through? It could just be like bocce ball or something. Yeah. Just a ball and a mallet, which is, again, this is a mental hospital. You maybe don't give
mallets to your patients. But it
is very ad hoc, like this game. There's no structure to it. Mm. They're all dressed in diaphanous robes and they're playing in the expansive grounds, and they're being overseen by the nursing staff, who it should be said.
Who look just as befuddled as when it comes to this game of croquet.
Revolutionary treatment. The staffers...
Croquet cures all.
It does. The staffers play checkers with the patients. That may be another kind of health modality. I don't know. That maybe it will have excellent outcome for the patients. But, man, this is... really about a bunch of different patients who are being sent to this place and how they all interconnect and how they're being treated by the staff. But
and of course there's more to it than that, because there's a
murder killer on
foot.
Yeah, a foot. And this is the kind of clad in black, skulking about figure that we've come to know and love from Giallo. Mm-hmm. Although it's a little bit of a twist on this one, and a little bit of how do you do? Like a little bit of a weird opener, because you did not expect for the killer to be interrupted right in the middle of his ostensible butchering, and the lights go on, and I think there's a dog in there, or one of the orderlies pops up, and he scurries off into the shadow. So
nor do you expect the killer to... I mean, he's wearing a mask. I don't know. It's not really a nylon stocking, but it's some sort of stocking over his head. And you don't expect him to take off his mask mid-kill. Now, mind you, he's lit by shadow and everything. It should be noted, by the way, this film is directed by Fernando de Leo. And Fernando de Leo is more well-known in the world of genre cinema for directing Italian polizzi films. A very stylish director, and that's very evident from this movie. Some of his titles are... One I've seen was called Naked Violence. Uh-huh. There's a lot of naked violence in this one.
There is.
I would say more of the consensual violence.
Yeah.
Caliber 9 and The Boss. So, yeah, he takes off his mask, the killer, and he's lit from behind, so you can only see his hair, and it's meant to lead you to think that it's a certain principal member of the cast who's a killer.
Indeed.
And we're not going to say whether he is or isn't, but this film has more red herrings than a fish market at 5 yeah. in the morning.
I was going to say he had a bit of a Dr. Fives vibe from behind. Did you see that at all? I don't know, maybe.
No.
Okay. And really, this is very languidly paced. So after that rather intense opening, there's really just lots of internecine drama between patient and staff, and this is all really quite drawn out in this elaborate romance between one of the nurses and one of the patients, and she's courting her out again in this in the grounds right by the croquet field with, "Oh, I can tell you're getting better," and the patient protests saying, "Oh, I don't think they care about me. You've gotten so much more beautiful," and all this, which is again an odd clinical approach, and they're foreshadowing obviously a burgeoning romance between the twosome, and boy is that ever, I'm going to use the term, exploited throughout this movie with a lean running time of hour 27. And really? Boy, depending on what cut you watch, this was Amazon Prime.
Okay. I saw it on Amazon Prime too, but it was 134. And quite explicit. Was yours?
Very explicit. Mm-hmm. And this, if you had cut out the this inappropriate patient romance, that would have dialed this running time back to maybe about 65 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that was unbelievable.
Speaking of inappropriate, another one of the patients, a very attractive patient, played by the wonderful Rosalba Neri, who's always in the arena, Lady Frankenstein.
Ooh, I forget. She's really fetching.
What's the name of her character?
Anna. Yeah. Anna.
She's a nymphomaniac, and she has her eyes on everybody, and she's there to basically be cured of this affliction, and she constantly laments, "I don't belong here with all these." The acting, I mean.
Yeah, it is what it is.
I think it was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where they described the filming of movies in Europe as the Tower of Babel type filming, where everybody is speaking
different
languages.
Okay, yeah.
And then it's all kind of ADR after, mm-hmm. you know. So her acting is not great, but she keeps saying, "I don't belong here with all these mental patients because there's nothing about me."
She effuses, "All I want to do is make love," you know. And then the clinician says, "Well, you have to do that in an appropriate manner. You know, you can't be wanting to make love with every..."
So in other words, wanting to make love with the gardener who wields a scythe is inappropriate, but wanting to make love with your husband is
Oh, that was a terrific scene where there's the gardener with his scythe and a mustache, and it's almost like the seventh seal, or I guess I can't even name...
Because of the mustache, I've seen him had a bit of a Charles Bronson vibe. Yeah, a little bit.
I think anyone with a mustache or a scythe, it's Seventh Seal or Death Wish, yeah.
Because when Charles Bronson was young, he didn't have a mustache, and I just said he had a young Charles Bronson.
But that was obviously a very Freudian, of which there are many elements, because he's holding this scythe in a manner that, a tumescent kind of manner, and the thing's spiking upward, and she's in this robe, and I gotta say, that character, she was just gorgeous, like perfectly cast nympho, and beautiful. Stunning, as they all were, every patient in here. There's other characters, one of whom is, I think, co-chair of this big company. She's on the board of directors, so she has some kind of influence, and her husband is, I believe, the other co-chair, and they're running this company, and, you know, that could be foreshadowing. I thought at the time it was just an irrelevant detail, so it was kind of interesting. The other people involved, there was... someone who developed this deep, longing attraction to the Klaus Kinski clinician, and for reasons really unexplained, other than the fact that, I don't know, mm-hmm. that he's got early 70s era Tom Petty mane that he's rocking, but he's just such a short, Willem Dafoe man.
From Friends, but
he's just so, I don't know, it's just that butt chin mm-hmm. he's got and those beady eyes, he's really not... He doesn't cut that dashing a
he's
figure.
He's very short as well.
Yeah,
He's all the other doctors tower over him. So unless they're really tall, he's a very short man. Mm. But the murders, I mean, they're not that plentiful. There's about 5 in total, maybe 6. But some of the implements are quite unique. I mean, you have swords, you have your requisite knife. One thing that's interesting is the murderer actually he's about to kill one of the woman who was going to run her husband off the road at the beginning of the movie. He was about to stab her with the knife, Then he decides that she's sleeping. He puts a knife in her hand, wakes her up, strangles her to death, and then stabs her afterwards. So that's kind of a unique
and drawing a kind of S-shaped slice down her belly, and then the camera lingers on her panties, exactly. And he pulls them down, and that was pretty evocative. I mean, halfway through, or maybe even earlier, this turned into a sex film. Yeah. And I was wondering if I was watching Killer Dwarf or something, because this has elements of maybe a hellhole with a, you know.
But I mean, there are some moments.
Mary Warnoff.
There are some moments when this went full hard. I mean, I wouldn't say full hardcore, but I mean, there was definitely penetration involved.
Yeah. If any viewer of this had tissue issues, then this would have been a way to ameliorate that. My God, there was some. I mean, not one, but two. Full on masturbatory, and you could say unnecessary, but where the camera is just zooming right in to right up the tuna tunnel, so to speak, and just roll your eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
I should cut that out, but I won't. Yeah, that was really, I mean, this tonally, this is a movie that's so, you hate to use the word schizophrenic, but it's so fractured and so. Mm-hmm. Beyond, it has elements of slasher, but not enough to warrant to call.
Giallo, but not enough. It has elements of pornography, but not enough. Correct.
And elements of extreme melodrama. Trying to tie this thing together is so mystifying,
but not enough. So you're right. I mean, it is very hard to categorize. I was going to just getting back to the murder implements. In addition to the swords and knives, there was some other kind of unique ones. There was a crossbow.
Yes,
implemented quite uniquely. There was
what a shot that guy is too.
Yep,
amazing.
There was an Iron Maiden. See, it got more medieval actually. Yeah. We got the crossbow. We got the Iron Maiden. We got the mace.
I forget the victim who met his demise with the Iron Maiden, but it
was he a doctor? Because he one more they showed.
It was a man definitely, but I can't. It would have been the only one. The rest were patients and females.
It must have been a doctor.
But it was weird because, I mean, that is horrifying. And Mario Bava makes amazing use of the Iron Maiden in, I believe, Black Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. Bava is all about the Iron Maiden, but I read up on it and it apparently wasn't that big a deal. It was more of a 19th century, I think, devised to scare people in a way. Like, it wasn't used in the Middle Ages to the extent that other truly terrible things were. So I don't know. I believe it was based on some other thing where you put the victim in a drum and then you make mock them and parade them around the town and have people throw things at them. So they took that idea and then added spikes and that. So that's kind of a relief in a way because people were so savage in the Middle Ages. So I'm glad to read, at least cursory reading, that was not a thing because, man, that's vicious being shoved into there. It's just... If there's a worse way to go, I don't know about it. There maybe is.
Being drawn and quartered doesn't
exist. Oh, exactly see, that you, really does exist. So, yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. And so, really, a hodgepodge, a bouillabaisse of different types of movies thrown in. And it makes you wonder, like, why? I guess this is DeLeo's first foray into horror because he's best known for, I guess, working in the Polizio Teschis. Oh, that's, I think, how you pronounce it. And then he worked with Sergio Leone on The Fistful of Dollars. And
he even acted a bit, too. He
was, oh, okay. Yeah. But his visual touch is really amazing, and I think it really suits him, this kind of work. And it would have been interesting to see more of this from him because, like, there's so many flourishes, but I don't know why. Like, I don't know who the audience would be for this because it's too... It's too sexy for a giallo.
It's too languid for... a horror film. It's too arty, you know, for the hardcore horror crowd. But then there's too much other stuff for the raincoat wearing crowd.
Yeah, so. There's a protracted, I mean, dance sequence between this is about a third of the movie between this nurse patient dalliance, and she one of them is dancing and they have this conga drum accompaniment, and then the other one's watching in a bra and panties, and just this so protracted. But again, I was on board because it was incredibly sexy, but really
sexy and stylish as well.
Yeah,
like everything looked amazing.
And it's finally when they connect, and there's this I thought they were going to go even further, but they very strongly hinted a cunnilingus scene, so this was sexy as all hell. And boy, did they undersell it on Amazon Prime. It said, I think, nudity and gore aplenty or something like that. But they didn't delve into the onanism and the fingering and the fucking and the, all this kind of crap and the
Chris
prolonged
voice my neighbors are
the prolonged sponge baths. It was almost like George Costanza in Seinfeld the silhouette. But I mean, the sponge bath, I mean, this is I'm surprised this was on Amazon Prime, to be honest. I'm
happy it was on Amazon Prime.
Well, likewise, it was I was pretty shocked, and the denouement was sort of shocking too, in a way. Like, you'd have to pay incredibly close attention to all the characters and how they interacted, or else you would have a specific element about how they're related would have been lost on you. And then, because I had to rewind it and go, okay, who the fuck is that guy? And the spoiler alert, it's a man, but I think you would guess that. But yeah, that was pretty intense. As far as Klaus Kinski goes, as Dr. Clay something or other?
He's sort of with the exception of being the most obvious red herring, he's sort of a non-entity, really.
He really is. All he does is he's the love interest of one of his patients for no reason. And he plays checkers with her and consults with some of the other members of the healthcare team and does little else.
And plays with his hair a lot. Parts his hair away from his eyes and his forehead. And
there's one kind of interesting scene where he walks directly into the camera, and it's very art house, like very Bergman-esque. And there's interesting zoom shots.
He doesn't
shots
walk directly into the camera. Well, but he walks directly toward the camera. Is, I think,
even
what
better.
Say.
Even better. Yeah. There's wide-angle shots of this fantastic sanatorium and the grounds, and one of the patients. Supine sitting on this bench and then just in this robe, and then just shot just for the sake of just for sheer beauty, which is fine. I mean, it's just that there's not much in the way of plotting to make anything really propel this thing. There's just nothing really to keep it going forward other than set piece after set piece of kills plus quite explicit sex scenes, and the rest of it seemed rather cobbled together. I don't know. Maybe they would have been better served to develop people before they got to the place. I don't know. They tried to do that with this languid drive through the Tuscan Hills. That's about it. Everyone else is just there. The most obvious red herring, yes, the wonderful gardener, who, I should say, shows a lot of restraint when he has that fabulous... Italian bombshell throwing herself at him and doffing her clothes in the greenhouse. And
just the way she was attired to walk through the grounds of a sanitarium was quite inappropriate.
Oh, this tight black bodysuit with this belt and this perfect and, shimmying
what
waist.
What do you call it? Like, it's not lattice, but like, you know, with all the...
I have no idea.
You know, anyway.
I should know because I've been watching Next in Fashion on Netflix.
Project Runway?
It's the next version of... Yeah. It's like an elevated Project Runway. Elevated. So it's very good.
Interesting.
And he protests that he could... And this is so silly. If this woman came up to me, I would ditch my manual labor job as quickly as... I mean, my God, he was so concerned about, oh, no, the staff could see. I'll lose my job. Mm. I'll lose my... Like, really, you can get another gardening job. It's not that big a deal, really. But yeah, that was tremendous, and lots of wandering around in the dark, lots of amazing suits of armor and mace and arrows and one of these medieval implements sticking out, and lots of beautiful shadows.
Yep.
I don't know. There's the makings of a really amazing film in here, and then there's detours into melodrama that don't serve it too well.
Yeah. So is this a point in the podcast we talk about what we learned?
I think it might be. Would you like to go first?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned before how this film... I mean, you cannot discount the artistry behind this movie. This is a very, very stylish, artistic, well-made film. One of the things that I noticed is that there was a lot of bursts of really, really beautiful, vibrant primary red, and I believe that was to sort of foreshadow the bloodline to come.
Yeah.
There was a very long carpet in the hallway that was the red, and so on and so forth, just red, 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 red. The soundtrack was pretty wild. Lots of what sounded like orchestrated screams and yelps, punctuated by very judicious uses of silence. That was another thing. You know, at certain points, everything on the soundtrack would drop away. That being the score, that being the dialogue, that being everything, and it would just be absolutely silent.
And then the odd de rigueur 70s flautist, that kind of thing. As
it almost sounded like you're going into like Baby Elephant Waltz.
It was weird. It's very.
That's what the song is called, right? I just know from the Dancing Homer episode of The Simpsons.
Oh my god!
Oh, you go on Dancing Homer, live up yourself. Oh, I apologize for that horribly racist accent. And the other thing I learned too is this film had one of the best headshots. When I say headshots, I don't mean model headshot. I mean shot to the heads that I've seen on celluloid. It was quite incredible.
Oh, and also
kind of a blink if you'll miss it, but it was pretty good.
I was going to say what I learned is the finale is absolutely glorious, and for a movie that's so indifferently paced and so that could have easily had 45 minutes just snipped right out of it if it weren't just for these aesthetic reasons of these wonderful zoom shots and this fulsome landscape and all this, the end is just so over the top and insane. And we don't want to spoil it, but I mean it matches the intro. So you have intro, lots of filler padding, occasional bouts of ingenious kills, and then languid nothing, and then the end just blows right up. So I mean that was, I didn't see that coming. I didn't see much of this coming other than the nurse-patient relationship, which that was pretty strongly hinted at, that there would be more of that to come.
Star rating for me, I'm going to give this one 3.75, because even though we did discuss a lot of debits about it, I really enjoyed the artistic nature of the film. I love when horror is elevated to the realm of art, and sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not successful, but at least they tried. I mean, not that well, actually a long time ago, but we discussed, speaking of Werner Herzog, we discussed his version of Nosferatu, which also starred
Klaus Kinski.
And that was horror and art done unparalleled, just absolutely impeccably. This one was maybe not as successful, but it was still done quite well. Honestly, this is going to sound really weird coming from me, but I could have done with less of the sex. It was a little, almost too explicit, like for my taste. I mean, I wasn't expecting something that would have been more akin in a movie like Sinful Dwarf, you know? I wasn't expecting some of the onanism and whatnot. I wasn't complaining, but at the same time, it kind of sort of took you away from the horror. So the balance wasn't there between the sex and the horror. All the same, though, I mean, in slasher movies, we're used to seeing people engaging in acts of flagrante de la,
whatever, yeah, yeah, you know, exactly,
getting off. So here we go. Here's a good example of that. We can't really call this one a slasher, but we can't really call it a giallo either. So it's kind of somewhere in the middle. All the same, I really appreciate this movie for what it was. I appreciate the ambition. I appreciate the Leo's direction. I always liked seeing Klaus Kinski, even though he was a bit of a non-entity in this movie. So yeah, 3.75 for me. What about you?
Well, maybe I'll throw in a few things as to what I've learned. Yeah, I can, it's just because I was thinking about that. The writhing around by the one character, even prior to the masturbatory scene there, that was really protracted as well, and but it was very beautiful in the way that, I mean, actually, the way that DeLeo treats the female form, uh-huh, is, I mean, the first victim or almost victim. It was, I mean, you get the, again, that same zoom shot and the descending of the camera down past her torso all the way down like to the nether regions, and you're just thinking like, what? But how incredibly stylish the female form is always treated in these films, that's for sure. Also, you'd be hard pressed to find a more beautiful setting than maybe Seven Bloodstained Orchids. You could say that this is an estate. This is so beautiful. Like, I would almost want to have a breakdown and go be treated there.
I was going to say that there was one scene with Rosalba Neri. What's her name again?
Rosalba Neri? Is that it? Yeah. Anna. Yeah.
Anna. There was one scene when Anna gets her amorous advances rebuffed and she's taking a shower. And she rides around so much. At one point, she's pretty much doing the climactic dance from Flashdance.
Well, that's interesting, because was that a clinical thing? Because not too distant past, they used to treat those with mental illness by wetting them, and specifically with cold water, or wrapping them in cold blankets, dipped in water. I mean, it's unbelievable what the mentally ill were put through in the not too distant past. We're talking 60, 70 years ago. And I thought that maybe this was some clinical thing to have these showers, because it was, I mean, again, elaborate just to pad the runtime, and just beautiful steam. And the, again, writhing around, half dancing, half flash dance, what call it what you will, but it was really lovely. And that just showers occupied, I would say, 10 to 15 minutes of runtime with the different characters. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't in a way that, okay, it's exploitative, sure, but it didn't, the camera didn't zoom in on the, it was quite a distance shot. It was there to enhance, just for purely aesthetic reasons.
It zoomed in at other moments.
Yeah.
And we also have to mention the, I mean, this was the 70s, and we have to mention the natural beauty of the women.
I was going
to
say, we podcasted a movie called The Pit, which is a fun 80s horror, and I have to say
there was
the troglodytes, right? Isn't that what it is?
Right, and they didn't call them the troglodytes.
Troglodytes? Okay, yeah. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
Pitt in this movie, I mean, the amorous nurse, I think it's Monica Strabel, I think a German actress, again, United Nations full of actors in here, but she was...
what a segue.
Well, yeah, thank you. Pits, thank you. And she had this...
I'll toff my hat to you, sir.
She had this coquettish... Little nursing hat and this red hair, a shock of red hair, and this tiny little body and this incredibly voluptuous little lingerie that she would run around in. And then, you know, she raises her arms. It's like she's got, you know, Sasquatch in a headlock under there. But it was shocking in a way, but also, I mean...
It was appreciated. It
was interesting. I don't know
it
why.
It reminded me as a kid when I came across the cache of my father's Playboy and Penthouse magazines.
Oh my God!
In the early 80s, and it was quite natural and fulsome and bountiful when it came to the pubic region of the women and whatnot. And
that's interesting, because it's my understanding that.
Boy, did I get in trouble for finding those magazines.
I can imagine. Oh man, I don't know how whether we want to delve into our. First experience getting busted for pornos, but
maybe we'll save that for another show.
Yeah, maybe. But I was thinking, like, even back in Roman times, like the extent to which women would make great pains and literally to pluck their body hair was quite extreme. So I think around that time they would do everything from burning off their underarm hair to whatever. And then all of a sudden in the 70s there was this burgeoning flower power, God knows what, and this, so that was full on. But
so star rating.
Star rating. Mm, I'm gonna say 3.25. A few debits because of the pacing, but I'm trying to figure out like what other film you can compare this to, because there really isn't. We've covered giallos here, whether it's Torso or Seven.
For example, the oeuvre of Jess Franco. I mean, he certainly mixes a lot of. Pretty explicit sex with horror, so we haven't really gotten into it. I don't think we podcast any of his films.
No, and that's interesting. I guess maybe we'll come to figure out where DeLeo's effort here fits into the greater scheme of things from a horror perspective. Yeah. But, I mean, boy, we've covered, I guess, Mad Men with axes, and we've covered Italian films, and now it was time to cover an Italian movie with where the killer predominantly uses an axe, so that was good. But you got to appreciate the wealth of medieval implements that the guy used. 3.25 for me. I thought that was really interesting, and we went through a bunch of movies that we were considering, and this just popped up out of the blue, and I never heard of it, despite being somewhat familiar with Kinski's movies, but... This one just was really off the radar for me, and it was even hard. I was trying to read up on.
Man also made a ton of movies. I mean, he was another actor just work. And
yeah.
If he wasn't making prestige pictures with his best fiend, and that's I say that deliberately because that's the name of a documentary on their relationship, my best fiend, Werner Herzog and Klaus Kinski.
Uh-huh.
He was making a lot. He also made a lot of great spaghetti westerns. He made one of my favorites called The Great Silence. And he was working a lot in Italian genre films, and he made a lot of schlocky horror as well. So
that was
and
never...
he also made how do you pronounce her name, Natasha.
He did, and he did a lot of things, and he was almost as prolific as we are with yet another episode in the can. We're approaching our 300th episode, and we hope you continue to enjoy Really Awful Movies podcast with new entries uploaded for your listening pleasure.
We're going to discuss the movie 300 on our 300 podcast.
I really hope not.
I don't know. Definitely not. That's not happening.
It would be appropriate, but we're not doing it.
Slipped right in there. Right? I don't know. It could be a giant retrospective of all the movies we've covered. I don't think so. No. I think we're going to, since it's just an arbitrary passage of time, it's just another entry. And it's by no means the end, because we have lots of stuff in store this year. So maybe we're going to do something related to winter. It could be spring break. It could be, I don't know. We'll see where
it could be. The Sound of Music. Who the heck knows?
I really hope not. I'll take 300 well. Over that. The Hills Are Alive, but it would be The Hills Have Eyes exactly. Rather than that movie. And continue to enjoy the podcast, and we will talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.